Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream this weekend's World Golf Championship in Memphis with a Now TV Sky Sports Day or Month Pass.
So the golf season is heating up. WGC this week in Memphis, and then we have major season. We didn't think we'd get here, but major season starting at TPC Harding Park in San Fran the following week. So it's all getting pretty exciting. You're welcome along to Golf Weekly. Fionn is in Manchester. Hello to you.
Hey, Joe.
Nathan Murphy, hello.
How's it going?
And Peter Laurie, hello to you.
Hello, Joe.
At Golf Weekly, OTP is where you'll get us. Some exciting news. We have a new sponsor, we're very happy to say. It's a testament to my hard work. And very happy to say Now TV have come on board. So Golf Weekly is very much brought to you in association with Now TV. So you can stream this weekend's WGC. You can stream the PGA Championship, all with a Now TV Sky Sports Pass. And we've been using this ourselves over the last couple of weeks. And it's great. I guess, Nathan, the point is, if you don't want to necessarily commit to a year-long subscription to your various providers, but you want to catch your golf or whatever, then this is a nice option for people. That's the whole point of it.
Well, it's perfect now for the next 3 months when you've got this nice little condensed golf season, when everything's going to be on over, what, between now and November? Yeah. Yes, I too wholly endorse this product, Joe.
The good news is we're giving away a 3 months Now TV Sports, Sky Sports Pass. So it's very simple and it's free to enter. So to win, just tell us who won last year's USPGA. Who won last year's USPGA? Tweet your answer to both at Golf Weekly OTB and at Now TV Ireland. So at Golf Weekly OTB and at Now TV Ireland. Tell us the winner and we're going to pick a winner on Monday. So that's our bit of housekeeping done and dusted. We had a winner in our competition last week, Nathan.
We did have a winner. We had a winner last week. So Peter, of course, knows all about this company. It turns out he's a vested interest. He was wholly endorsing last week's competition.
I said endorsing.
Yeah. So remind us again what it was for last week, Peter.
Fairways and Fun Days.
That's enough plug for that. That we know what it was. We give it a good plug.
Okay.
Our winner is Mark Colgan from Selbridge. Now, luckily, none of us are from Selbridge, so there could be no controversy about this. I picked the winner without any consultation. I just randomly, there's no rhyme nor reason to this. If you're thinking, is there a good time to enter? There isn't. I literally just scroll down until I get bored, click on the person, DM them. And I hadn't even noticed they were from Selbridge until about 2 seconds ago. But we can confirm that Joe Malloy does know Mark.
Mark and I played football together for years.
Wow.
So I do know Mark, yeah. I have seen the man naked.
I think the terms and conditions are you just can't be related.
Oh, are they? Okay. Yeah, so
if any of you have any good friends, a mad coincidence, Joe.
And you just picked that at random, what, flicked through, the scroll through and just stopped on Mark's name?
Now that I notice, he does have a picture of yourself and himself as his...
What's the prize? What was the prize, Nathan? Remind me.
You remind me, Peter. The prize was a four ball.
Yeah.
Somewhere very nice.
Is Joe going to play in that four ball?
Oh, no. Here, that is no way.
No.
That is not happening.
No. Okay. I genuinely had nothing to do with this, and that is an eerie coincidence that of all the names you picked out, Mark Colgan. Because we got plenty of entries, didn't we?
Lots of entries, as always, hundreds.
Okay. And you got my text saying, pick Mark. No, okay.
It's the only way I know the podcast is live, is that within like 2 seconds, people are entering the competition.
Yeah, okay. Well, good man, Mark. Jeez. Well, listen, you have my number. So this week, 3 months free Now TV Sky Sports Pass. It means you can just stream Sky Sports on your phone, basically, or whatever device you want to stream it on, tablet, laptop, etc. So at Golf Weekly OTB, at Now TV Ireland, who won last year's USPGA? Let's get stuck into the events at hand. So Memphis is very much the destination point this week in golf. And then we've got the USPGA Championship upon us in San Francisco. A few bits and bobs going on. We want you to start with this news, Nathan. Irish Open, Rory McIlroy speaking in advance of the tournament in Memphis has no idea, he says, about the Irish Open. I've no clue. He's talking here about whether it's going ahead. You know as much as me. And honestly, I don't know if I see myself going back to Europe this year. I don't know. I don't know if I want to travel. I don't know if I want to be exposed to more things and more people. So I don't know. I have no idea. I would deduce from that it's unlikely we're seeing Rory McIlroy in Europe and at the Irish Open, if it happens at Mount Juliet this year.
Yeah, I guess on the Irish Open first, Peter is the man with all the connections as to whether there's been any movement. A month ago, it did seem when the Ryder Cup was being postponed that the Irish Open could just slide into that little gap in the calendar. I guess they're looking at the way the outbreak is going and the green list and people who can come into the country. I know exemptions are made across the world, it seems, for sports people. But whether or not the Irish government will be willing to do that for an Irish Open, and we're only 6 weeks away from it now. I know there's going to be no spectators, so maybe there's not a huge amount of preparation. So have you heard anything, Peter? Can you give us any exclusives?
Let's put it this way. A previous Ryder Cup captain was hitting balls in the range there a couple of weeks ago. And he had actually... No. he had told me that the Irish Open was looking kind of a 50-50, but there would be an announcement pretty shortly. So since that announcement hasn't come out, I would say it's a non-runner for this year. Purely probably because the main sponsors would be Dubai Duty Free, and for them to, you know, get anybody here would be kind of impossible with the restrictions on travel and stuff like that. So I wouldn't think so.
Has the talk of old head swooping into host it gone as well?
Well, that was in the conversation at the time, and I just couldn't see how old head could come in, take the Irish Open for a year, but with the issues of, again, transportation and travel and et cetera, and accommodation in the area. Ireland is pretty full with staycations at the moment, so, you know what I mean? They'd have to have booked out quite a big hotel to get everybody, you know, in their circle.
Yeah, I'm sure. I think I went through it a few weeks ago when the email came through about maybe wanting to cover one of these tournaments that's going on in England and Wales, the list of regulations that were in place just for the media. And you would need that from an Irish point of view. And as you say, the resources that are needed to put that in place are probably quite difficult. It'd be great if it happened for a week, but like, what McIlroy is touching on is going to be everybody who's playing in America, you would assume. Are any of them going to come over? And you read the quotes and the obvious thing, you're in America. You're in a far more dangerous part of the world right now than coming home to play in Ireland or the UK. But he can make his own decisions around this. He probably does. I guess he's asked about it and he feels he needs to talk about it. Yeah. The way the headline reads is going to end up with a backlash. And there's been a little bit of a backlash because it's so easy to counter. If you're that worried about it, what the hell are you doing playing around America? But he obviously feels he's in his own little bubble there, and that the PGA Tour is a not quite a watertight bubble, no. But that he feels confident in whatever process he has in place, that he's as safe as can possibly be, then coming back and forth, again, I don't know. He can do what he wants, clearly.
Yeah, if the Irish Open was going to go ahead, if it was, surely the first person that would know about it would be Rory McIlroy. He would have been contacted. Yeah, he would have been contacted to say, look, Irish Open is in such and such a date. Is there any possibility of you playing? Now, if Rory is true to his word and knows nothing about it, there ain't no Irish Open going to go ahead.
Yeah, okay. That's a pity. It seemed like they were going to get it off the ground. I mean, he does have a different relationship to the Irish Open to Shane Lowry. You suspect it's Shane Lowry's, you know, one of his most important events, certainly just right below a major championship, if not even in some respects on the same tier, whereas McIlroy obviously missed Lahinch, and Lowry had said he's definitely coming home no matter what. For McIlroy, I suspect it's probably an easier decision for him. You know, ultimately, he's judging his year off majors, as he is entitled to do, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, although, what a difference a couple of months makes. So in June at the RBC Heritage, Rory made his kind of fairly kind of trenchant statement about talking about Lee Westwood and Eddie Pepperell. If I were in their shoes and I was asked to come over to the States and shelter in place or quarantine for 2 weeks before these tournaments, I would have done that. Because if you really care about your career and care about moving forward, you should be here. And then this week, he's amended his viewpoint slightly. That's not to say what Lee and Eddie are doing isn't right, that they feel safer and they feel their time is better spent at home and not exposing themselves to more people and not having the chance of getting sick or getting someone else sick. I completely understand where they're coming from, and which suggests both that he has, as Harold Macmillan said in the 60s, events, dear boy, events. And also as well is that it's a softener for his own stance on not doing a huge amount of international travel over the coming months. But as you said, you know, his bread and butter is the PGA Tour, it's majors. That's where all of his focus is correctly on.
Well, that's sort of all this really underlines. To be honest, again, you read the headline last night, you know, why even go there? Because it is such an easy option now for people, another stick for people to beat him with. But then you think about it. Why would he come and play in Europe this year? He said if there was a major here, he probably would come. So again, maybe opens up accusations of hypocrisy. But there's no tournament that's taking place over the next 6 months in Europe that he needs to play in. No. Okay, he should come home maybe and play in Ireland. We've already had that conversation a couple of years ago. Play at Wentworth in the BMW PGA Championship. They're playing for that sort of money pretty much week in, week out in America. So why bother? Why not just stay there? The Masters is going to be there in November. So he's having to cross the Atlantic just to play a couple of tournaments. Kind of out of the goodness of his heart.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple of sponsors that he needs to... And again, maybe it's not as simple. Peter, you're probably getting on top of this. Then it's not as simple for Rory to just come and play the PGA at Wentworth. If he's suddenly in England, there's probably a whole lot of sponsorship deals that want a little piece of him. That actually, if he doesn't just go, he can just push back a year till things are a little bit safer.
There's a big tax man as well. If he pitches up and plays in the UK. Remember, who was the first person to get hit by it was Andre Agassi, I think. Mm. Tennis players. Once you played in one tournament, the English revenue wanted if he played 20 tournaments, they wanted 1/20th of all his earnings. So there's a big call playing, coming back to the UK, and a lot of, well, I wouldn't say a lot of players, but a few players refused to play in Wentworth because of that reason.
Right. Didn't realize that. Memphis. You've been to Memphis, I presume, Fionn?
I have. Yeah, it's lovely. Beale Street. Lovely. It's great. It's music.
I hope your Lonely Planet review was a little bit better than that.
I didn't write a Lonely Planet review.
I spent €18 on this book. Lovely.
Yeah. Yeah, Memphis is brilliant. It's one of the most popular cities in the South. Great nightlife, really great nightlife, and a kind of a liberal bent in a conservative world, you know. So Tennessee, and you've got in the middle of it, like, and it's everything. It's from hipsters, cowboys, guys who love guns, guys who love punk rock, and country music, load of country music. I've been there for years.
Would it be in your top 10 American cities to see if you're going to see 10 American cities?
Jeez, no, right. Probably not.
That's all I needed to know.
I mean, it could be. I don't know. It's thereabouts. Like, I really only got. Have I got? I've got. Who do I have? New York, New Orleans, Chicago, San Francisco, L.A., Miami. Yeah, maybe. Maybe it might make the top 10. It's not a bad place.
Would you Boston in there?
I lived in New York for one quarter of my life, so. As anyone who understands the New York-Boston dynamic, it's like saying, I'm a Dubliner, and someone goes, he's talking about Cork. Cork is to Dublin what Boston is to New York.
I know. No. Cork isn't,
so
really,
no.
Cork isn't really Boston at the same time.
You know, that just answers a lot of questions I've ever had about you, Fionn. spending that much time in New York.
I love New York.
Yeah.
Boston's fine. I mean, the kind of historic part of Boston's lovely. But, yeah, it's all right. I love New Orleans. If I had to pick a city that I would recommend anybody to visit beside the obvious ones, it's New Orleans. Right. Or New Orleans.
Okay. Yeah. Brooks Koepka, let's just jump off on him then. He missed the cut at the 3M Open. I kept meaning to find what 3M meant and just never did. The 3M Open, won by Michael Thompson.
They give a lot to charity.
Huh? They give a lot to charity.
I'm sure they do.
Okay. Absolutely. Full of stand-up guys. 3M Open, won by Michael Thompson, by the way. His second career win, first since 2013. Lovely interview afterwards. Came across well, meant a lot to him. But Koepka missed the cut at the 3M Open, and for the first time, I think, since just before March, he got to work with Pete Cowan. So he said, if ever there was a good cut to miss, I think that was the one, he said this week. I feel like I'm getting better and better. I saw signs of it last week. He's had one top 10 in a year. The most worrying thing I thought he was saying was he can't get over to his left side with his knee. Now, I don't know much about the golf swing, as you can attest to, but not getting over to your left side, Peter, that's not a good start.
No, but can I just go back at one sentence there? Pete Cowan is a short game coach, is he not?
Yeah.
But I think he drags Pete in for a look at the full shebang when he gets hold of him.
Which must annoy Claude Harmon no end.
Well, he said Pete and Claude agree on everything.
Well, considering
that I make them a lot of money.
They say exactly the same way, he said.
Yeah. Claude was really annoyed that
Pete.
Brooks flew to see Claude, or to see Butch only recently, did he not?
No.
Well, a couple of months ago. He did.
But Claude gave it with his blessing.
Oh.
Because they see things the same way.
Yeah. So now the three of them see things the same way. I doubt that very much.
Mm. Okay, so this is inside info then.
How is it inside info?
You're telling me Claude,
of course he was. He had to go see his dad. Hold on there now, you know what I mean? I'm not quite good enough. I have to go see my dad and, you know, to try and figure out what's wrong with you. I called this a while ago with Brooks. He wasn't all there for a while, and he has struggled now since.
Mm. I was looking, he's coming in. And did you see he was slightly pointed in his, he was asked about his form and whether he's a bit concerned going into this week where he's the defending champion. And he goes, I'm defending, aren't I? And he's like, oh, come on. You feel like going, Brooks, come on. Like, you're so out of form. At least comment on that. You know, it's just like, you have to get defensive about this. I looked at the stats. So he's, last year he won, he led strokes gained putting, and his ball striking was superb. This year he's coming in 137th in approach shots and 140th in putting.
Wow.
Like chalk and cheese, you know. He is not coming in anywhere near the form, obviously, that he had going into the WGC last year.
It's so interesting, the putting is so off. I mean, would think maybe if he can't practice full shots, he might focus on the short game. Because he's sixth in the world now. He's about to lose one of the great ever years of world ranking points very soon. So he could actually fall outside the top 20 in the world very, very soon. And he's outside the top 125 in the FedEx. So, I mean, he's kind of looking at needing to win this tournament or a major to kick on. In terms of just where he is and his body, he was saying he can't run. And he's bigger. He doesn't look half as fit as he used to. He can't run. He says, I have to take these little steps and I try to do it very quickly. And that's how I run right now, which is a hilarious image. He says, biking I can do once a week without it flaring up and getting too painful. Can't do much cardio. It's definitely changed a lot of things for sure. And he's talking about maybe having to have stem cell surgery again at the end of the season. So, God, you compare that to last year, Nathan. Like, I remember it so well, where he won at Bethpage, and then it was him and Rory on the Sunday final round, and it was such a statement on Koepka's behalf. I mean, just real man of stuff, and probably was along with Portrush, gave McIlroy a kick up the backside.
Yeah, and if it wasn't for his putting last year in big tournaments, it would have been one of the greatest years of golf we've ever seen. But just how bad is this knee injury, and why, after a break of 3-4 months, does it not seem to be any better? Mm. So, again, he contradicts himself a lot when one week to the next in terms of the severity of it. So he was saying 2 weeks ago that I can't put the blame for my poor form on my problems with my knee. But there clearly is a huge issue there. And if it couldn't be fixed in the space of 3-4 months, how much of How much of a gap is he going to need to take at the end of the season? Mm. And there is no real end of the season now, considering there's only, what, 5 months between the two Masters, as there will be in November and April?
Yeah.
So you're right. It's got to be if you can't run. And like Peter, I'm sure, can go through his swing as to where it takes the brunt of it. Like, this is massively concerning, but it will be one of the great, I won't say comebacks, but if he was to somehow turn up next week, having done nothing all year, and arrive at a PGA, at a major, and somehow it's all just back.
It would just be hilarious. All he cares about are majors. It would just be...
And he'd be like, I mean, he was fine. I never did much running anyways. I thought people used to all say this weird little runway, took little steps.
Yeah, he doesn't look right. I mean, I'd be amazed. He really doesn't.
The issue with the left knee is every good player starts his downswing with his left ankle, right? And then it goes up to your left knee. Okay, so all the pressure goes into that movement there. So he will really struggle if that left knee is not firm, not solid, not... And plus, it's a mental thing as well. If it's sore going through the ball, you're it's very difficult to get your brain to go through the pain barrier.
Speaking of ankles, that brings us to Tony Finau, also in the field this week. So Michael Thompson won the 3M Open, and good on him, very good. But Finau now, what, 30 top 10s and one win, Peter? You tipped him. The Twitterati, once again, your mates on Twitter.
Yeah.
They were sharing you with love
on the Twitter.
Yeah. And then, so is Finau blowing up? Is Finau a choker?
He is close to it. He's close to it. He has the game to finish it off. And I'm shouting at the TV, which is not like me, on Sunday. And the kids were annoying me. And I said, shut up. I want to see what's going on. Tony Finau, I've backed, you know, I didn't have any money on it, but I've told people to back him. You know, I wanted to be right 2 weeks in a row, which is always nice. But no, I don't know. He got rid of the caddy last week. He had his coach on the bag last week. He's searching now for a new caddy. But he suffers badly on a Sunday. His stroke average on Sunday is like 72 something or other, which is terrible for a Sunday. And he just doesn't seem to be able to get it done. Simple as. So it can only be mental.
He did shoot 3 under though on Sunday, which is what Nick Faldo said. This is a course it's a 3 under course. You should be shooting 3 under, and sure enough, Finau shot 3 under. But what did Thompson shoot? Was Thompson 5-6 under for the day?
Yeah, the par they reckoned for Tony was 4 under.
Okay,
because he could reach all the par fives. He can reach the par four and one. But he just didn't do it at all. And very disappointing, I have to admit.
What is it, 30 top 10s?
Yeah.
That's insane.
How hard to win?
If it is a mental thing, like if he was to fix that, like and I know he's not one of the younger players, but like what he could achieve. Is he a comfortably top 5 in the world player with his skills?
I'd say top 10.
Right.
I wouldn't give him top 5. But top 10 for sure.
Do you see any difference in him on a Sunday?
He just doesn't look like he has the killer instinct. You know, when he gets into a position to take control of it. Some of the shots he hit on Sunday were just, you know, downright bad. Like hunting for flags when he didn't really need to. That par 3 in around the, I want to say 13, was it? He went straight for the flag, hit it in the bunker right, didn't get up and down, then didn't birdie the par 5. So it's like making 2 bogeys in a row.
Yeah, that's right. Is there an issue? Because, I can't read his mind, whether he's a choker or not. But is it that he just makes bad decisions, or that his team aren't, like, is his caddy and he, should they be working out a better strategy here, like to not put themselves into trouble? Or maybe is that how Finau plays his best golf, by just going for things and feeling loose? And
Well, let's see who his new caddy is, Phil. I'd like to see somebody with a little bit more structure on the bag, and somebody who's kind of nearly calling the shots, take his brain out of it and just let him hit it.
Yeah, I think that's certainly the impression I got. It was just like their course management just was poor. Mm. And you saw it, like exactly that on that par three. It was like, there's no need to go for that flag.
No. You know? Get Bones. Bones is around. I mean, Bones is
Bones is caddying for Justin Thomas this week.
Yeah. So Justin Thomas' caddy is ill, so Bones is in after being with Matt Fitzpatrick. I think Bones is thinking, Davis Love has left CBS now and he's gone back focusing on his game. I reckon Bones is thinking, the TV thing was nice, but I'd like to get back out there. That could be a nice fit for a fee now.
It's actually, golf's gain is our loss, or the player's gain is our loss, because I thought Bones as an analyst is almost unparalleled. He's absolutely brilliant.
Brilliant. I think we'll survive without Davis Love III.
Yeah, for sure.
But Bones.
Oh my God.
Bones is good.
Yeah. What about Trevor Immelman? Do you like him on the commentary?
I can't tell the difference between him and his brother Mark, because they're both on.
Yeah.
He's, when they did the match, it was Trevor Immelman he's like the straight man, isn't he? He's the guy giving stats and details. Justin Thomas was on course, and then you had Charles Barkley just whatever, being Charles Barkley. But I thought Immelman gives like a bit of solid structure to it all.
Yeah, I genuinely don't know if it's him or Mark, because Mark's on a lot as well.
I didn't even know they were brothers.
Yeah, yeah.
Thought it was just coincidence that two Immelmans ended up working
in golf?
No, I didn't even get the other fella on it at all.
I genuinely would think, Peter, a lot of the time you think you're listening to Trevor, you're listening to Mark Immelman.
Yeah, well, I always assumed I was listening to Mark until one evening they had them in shot, and I was like, oh, they look very alike. Or and then I was wondering, actually, had it been Trevor all along?
Yeah,
so I think it's clearer.
I think it's like 70% Mark, and then Trevor does.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So you've been listening to, I guarantee you've been listening going, oh, Trevor, but it's been Mark who's a coach.
Guys, before we move on from last week, can I just throw a tiny bit of shade at Dustin Johnson? Okay, so he shoots 78 on the Thursday and withdraws, right? But before he withdrew, so at the end of his round, he's talking to the journalist. Not a long interview, just a few comments. Never once mentions that his back was sore. Not once. Doesn't mention it at all. There's no. And then 2 hours later, he withdraws with back pain. Now, I don't know.
Yeah, maybe if you chose.
Go on, say it.
I'm just saying, I just think it's a bit odd that, like, when you're asked to summarize your round, that it didn't dawn on you to go, well, to be honest, I was troubled by my back the whole day. Or I tweaked something in my back on the 9th, or I reached the 16th and all of a sudden I realized that I wasn't moving properly because of my back. Like, there is literally no mention. And then a couple of hours later, a statement announcing Dustin Johnson's withdrawal. And then he was kind of quick to say that a withdrawal doesn't interfere with his start at the WGC. So I'm like, I don't know. I am sure, I would wager that there have been players who withdraw from tournaments. They're just not feeling because, you know, you can't just withdraw because you don't want to play anymore. But that you can, like, go on, someone diagnose a back injury. You can't, so.
Yeah, after the 78, he had no chance of making the cut. There was a famous story, and one of the Irish players pulled out. He played 18 holes, had shot quite a high number. And he said, no, I'm going to withdraw. And he says, oh, well, you're going to have to go speak to the tournament director. So he goes into the tournament director, and the tournament director goes, you know, what's wrong with you? And he says, oh, I have a bad back, and I'm going to need a doctor cert. And the reply came, would one be enough? In other words, a doctor cert is what you want. So, and a bit like Dustin Johnson, somebody will write him a doctor cert to say, back problem or spasm or whatever, and away you go.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe Dustin Johnson did have like a crippling back pain and just forgot to mention it. But it just...
Well, in fairness, he may well have and just forgot to mention it. It is Dustin Johnson. What was the problem?
That's true.
Now that I remember it, actually, I could barely pick up the tee the entire way around. I knew there was something.
Yeah.
So, well, let's move on to Memphis then. 78 players, no cut, no Adam Scott, and no Tiger Woods. Tiger, by the way, no chance in Harding Park. None. It's long. The rough is going to be thick. His back isn't behaving. No. It's that. That's not going to happen. So he's not playing this week. Rory is there. What do we need to see from Rory this week to feel good about Harding Park, which should suit him, by the way? Should be able to bomb it down there.
A top 10? Like a solid top 10. Four decent rounds.
Not a reversing top 10, please.
No. That's what I mean. Like four decent rounds, that means, you know, like I don't think Rory needs to win to prove anything to anybody, but he needs to perform well over 4 days.
Mm. Yeah.
He needs 18 holes. He needs, 72 holes anyway, for sure.
Which is going to get that.
He's going to get that, yeah.
I would have thought, considering what's going on, and listen, it's all 78 are in there are wealthy individuals anyways, but the golf would have got rid of these limited field events that actually open it up, have 150 there. Like, it's a very condensed season. Mm. Why do half these guys, I think Harrington is gone to play in the Barracuda. Like, an awful lot of good players don't get in.
I didn't see him in the, I was actually looking up the Barracuda list, and I saw, which I was surprised that Martin Kaymer is playing there, and so is Alex Noren. But I haven't seen...
I maybe changed his mind because I checked, because I was wondering, because we're going to
get in touch with him
to see, was he going to play next week? After Westwood, and he certainly on Monday when I had a look, he was in the field, so maybe he changed his mind.
No, I don't think he's left Ireland at all. He's still doing his Twitter videos at the back garden with the dog Wilson eating all the golf balls.
As in, Nathan, you think that given the circumstances, they should give more golfers an opportunity to play golf?
Exactly, yeah, for more money.
Yeah,
there should have been some sort of an end of the elitism because of what happened. Now, again, we're talking the majority of players, even if he opened it up to 150, would be very wealthy individuals. Mm. So maybe it's not the end of the world. But I just don't see the reason for it.
Yeah.
78 is a weird number. I know there's all sorts of qualification criteria and things like that. If you're in the top 100 in the world, you'd go into most tournaments thinking you have a chance. Funny, actually, that was one of the things I thought was nice about Michael Thompson last week. It feels this year as if it's big name after big name after big name winning every week. Yeah. And they have an expectation on themselves that they'll win tournaments. And even Morikawa, when he wins, like, again, would feel he's at that level where he should be winning a couple of times a year. To have somebody go, oh, you know, I've got an interesting backstory here. Finally, I needed this. I desperately needed this. I'm going to the PGA. Thank God, this is going to change my life. It's quite refreshing.
Yeah, no, it was nice. It was nice. Jason Day, by the way, has ended his relationship with Colin Swatton. That's just another bit of news coming out of Memphis. 20 years together. He'd been caddying for him as well, but he was his coach since he was a kid. And he's going to try and do a Tiger Woods in it now, Jason Day, and work on his own swing. He's not looking to hire a new coach. Hasn't won in 2 years. Chronic back issues. Done world number one, major winner. Mm.
Fallen to 43rd in the player rankings.
It's sad when you see him, whenever he comes on, and much like Tiger in so many ways, the camera always seems to linger for a couple of seconds afterwards just to see if there's a wince.
Yeah.
The slightest wince and the commentators jump on it. He was such an exciting player to watch for a while as well. There was that 2-3 year spell where you just felt he was going to go on and dominate and win many, many majors and put himself in contention major after major. But like we joked about it a couple of years ago, unfortunately, it may well come true that the next time he wins, you know, Dash is going to be a 20-year-old man
driving,
strolling on.
People, like even the way Day picks his ball out of the hole.
Yeah,
now,
that's the one I noticed.
He's ginger. He's no flexibility in his back. He has to keep his back straight.
Yeah,
bend down to pick the ball up. He's to like go and genuflect his knee down.
Is that for show?
No, I don't think so.
But that's the one thing that is always. Has been, again, one of the sadder parts of the Jason Day story is that he's obviously had huge problems with injury, but people have always questioned it, that he was a bit soft. You know, so he had a strain and he wouldn't be able to play, or he'd pull out of the tournament, pull out of the Pro-Am. Whereas most players would just get on with it.
Peter said that vertigo wasn't a real thing at Chambers Bay.
Did I?
No. But that was it added to sense. You know, come on. But this vertigo was terrible that time in the course. It was like shocking. I've never had vertigo.
No.
But it did.
That skeptical view, that kind of, oh, you know, come on, harden up.
Yeah.
They did that to Tiger as well in 2008. Like, is he exaggerating? And, you know,
he did make sure everyone knew about the knee.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, other than
he
the
was he was exaggerating.
You mean when he won the US Open on a broken leg? That one.
Yeah.
Was it broken? Was there a crack? It was phenomenal. Yeah. But the dramatics, look, he's a demonstrative man, and he understood the power of the getting down on the knee, and it's theater. He knows what he's doing as well.
Do you think so?
Tiger, yes. Like Tiger, yeah. Tiger's an actor, you know.
I mean, other than the fact that like every camera on the course is trained upon his every, you know, every blink, you know, and nobody cares what the 120th guy in the field is doing, but everyone's looking at Tiger. I mean, I just think there is, I mean, in sports generally, there is a kind of a suck it up and don't be such a wuss attitude, which, you know, whatever. I take Jason Day at his word. I think he's totally. He's obviously been literally crippled by this back pain, and it's affected him. He can't perform really.
It's ruined his game, so it's clearly the case. Yeah.
Every time he goes to pick up that ball, it's just like, oh, ugh. And maybe let me ask you this, Peter. What would he have to gain from putting it on for show? What would be the what advantage is there for him?
For him personally? People in nature want people to either love them or feel sorry for them in some shape or form.
Okay.
They want to be wanted. Okay. And Tiger was the same thing. When things weren't spectacularly great, let's exaggerate it. Are you telling me Jason Day can't hit it 300 yards with driver? If his back was that bad, he wouldn't be able to swing it like that. Mm. I don't care how you do it. So it's all for show. These guys out here are for showmen. That's what they are. They're in the entertainment industry, as we all say. And the majority of them, in my opinion, are, what would you call them? Prima donnas would be the word I'd use.
Were you a prima donna? There.
No, not at all.
Could you have done with being a bit more of a prima donna?
Who knows?
What do you mean they're prima donnas? So, okay, Jason Day bending down his back, fine. But like,
oh, look at me. Oh, it's so sore. Oh, I have to take it out of the hole. Oh, maybe the caddy could do it for me next time, you know? Next thing, you'll see the caddy running over. Remember years ago when Ben Crenshaw and the caddy running over in the Masters to pick the ball out of the hole? That's what it's going to get like.
So is Jordan Spieth the prima donna?
Yes.
Is Tony Finau?
No, he's not. You don't get that ankle sprain, and which he did in the Masters, and get away with it. Like, we all saw that. That was just gruesome.
So are you talking about a certain kind of toughness here, resolve, when you say prima donna?
No. The prima donnas are the fellas like Jason Day who are picking the ball out of the hole. Tony Finau is the guy who sprained his ankle and then went to play in the Masters.
No, I know what you mean. I'm just trying to, when you say a prima donna, do you mean somebody who's got a big ego, or do you mean somebody?
Yes, they've got a huge ego, and when things are not going right, then, you know, what are we going to do for this ego? How are we going to? So we either place particularly well and people love us, or let's have some kind of an injury and people will love us even more. That's my opinion.
Very cynical.
Very
cynical. I know, call me the cynical.
I'm not buying that at all.
That's life.
That's
come here.
I'm not buying that at all.
Yeah. So, but what about, does that not leave room for See, the problem with that worldview, and I'm not saying you're not right in the sense of in life we either want to be loved or you want people, if we can't be loved, you want us to, we want people to feel sorry for us, which I think, yeah, it's, but it, where's room for genuine hurt and genuine and battling through injury? Where is, like, doesn't leave a lot of room for that.
Okay, let's take, for example, Michael Thompson, who won last week. There's a genuine guy, you know, a very, very grounded, hard worker. I was amazed at the bunker shot he hit on, was it 16?
Yeah.
That was beautiful.
The absolute, what would you call it, resolve to hit a shot like that at that time. And then to win the tournament by a shot. So, yeah, there is your model pro.
So is the model pro, and I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just kind of curious as to how you think about these things.
You're trying to pull my. You go to yourself and Joe try and pull my sentences out. From
No. Okay. So,
is it not all like what you is touching on that? Unfortunately, what made Michael Thompson in many ways a great story is that nobody thinks about Michael Thompson. He's been able to go through the last 4 years without being asked at the end of every round, what's wrong with you? Whereas Jason Day, if he does have something wrong, and we know he can play at his very best, he's the best player in the world. And if that's not happening, people are constantly going to be probing him, what's going wrong? So he has two options and go, I don't know. Or, well, actually, I have this pain, or I have this, or I have this, or I have this. And be honest about it. And then you're honest about it. And you're hammered for being honest.
Yes.
Life's a bitch.
But also as well, so is the model, so come here, Peter, is the model pro then is, and let's be honest, other than the most nerdish of European golf watchers, Michael Thompson is not a name that would be particularly well known to most of them. So is the model pro then is the, you know, the anonymous journeyman, because that's what Thompson is. He's a journeyman. He's the anonymous journeyman who's had two beautiful strokes of, I won't say good fortune, but certainly has come good twice in his career. And we celebrate that because it's a nice story to see the underdog, the unknown guy come good. But that's the model pro then? The guy who never becomes famous.
No, but he has just become famous. He has just won to become famous to a point.
Sure.
But where
he's also, by the way, a really, really good bunker player. You know that?
Yeah.
No, but I mean, it's like by his own admission, he practices bunker shit. Like he spends like 5 hours in a bunker just hitting bunker shots. Yeah. So that shot he hit on 16, it was just like he goes, I knew I had it. It was there. It was, you know, anyway. Yeah. No, I'm just curious. I'm curious. That's just
this tough love. This tough love is like your kids, Peter. Is this a trace when you're at home in the evening that daddy things didn't go well, and you're like,
there's two rules in my house.
Bitch.
Go on.
Two rules in my house: no whinging, okay, and no moaning. No whinging.
Same
no
rule.
Moaning.
It's the same rule.
Yeah, but it's not.
So whinging is more for the children. Moaning is more for the adults.
We're moving off this.
Okay,
we're just getting nowhere here. We'll do a section next week if there are enough tweets. Ask Peter, prima donna or not, send us a golfer or just a person in the world, and Peter will say yes or no. That's the best way to do this. We'll do a quick 5 minute quick fire.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough.
Prima donna or not, according to Peter Lowry, life is a bitch. So. You picked Fina last week and you picked Ram the week before. Favorites this week, John Rahm's about 10-1 territory. Then there's McIlroy, then Justin Thomas. Bryson is in the field. Xander Schauffele is there about 16s. Webb Simpson, we're all underestimating Webb, about 20-1. Then Patrick Cantlay and Colin Morikawa. The days of getting outrageous value on Morikawa are gone, sadly. So he's about 20-1. Peter, do you want to try and have a stab at who's going to win around Memphis and why?
No, I'm not going to put my neck on the line here this week.
Pathetic. You're a prima donna.
Pathetic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pathetic. Yeah. I think it's, to be honest with you, it's wide open.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
It, you know, 70 odd guys, no cut, no pressure, get out there. Yeah. No, I have possibly won. And he played very well. I don't know who's caddying for him this week. Matt Fitzpatrick.
Yeah.
He had bones on the bag. Okay, he kind of reversed into a top, the top three or four last week, was it?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. But he's kind of settled now in the US. And then another guy is, and I'm going for Europeans this week, is Tommy Fleetwood.
Oh, yeah.
Looked like he played halfway decent, but he had those 2 weeks that he had to stay in quarantine in the States. So Matt Fitzpatrick or Tommy Fleetwood.
Okay.
Did you ever play in a no-cut event?
Yes, I played in the WGC in China.
Where and are players' attitudes different when there is no cut?
You're not looking at the airlines home on a Friday night. apart from that, not really, no. If you don't get up the top of the leaderboard quickly, then it's kind of a dogfight down the bottom.
Right.
Sorry, I played in the one in Dubai quite a bit. Played there about 4 years in the bounce. And that was the one, if you don't get on the early bus, sorry, if you're on the early bus on the Thursday and you don't shoot a good score, you were on the early bus Friday, Saturday, Sunday because you were playing in cool conditions over a big golf course. It was so difficult to score.
Oh, sorry, it becomes harder to play in the cooler conditions.
First thing in the morning, ball's not traveling, golf course is wet. By the time 12 o'clock comes, you know, air is thin, warm, golf course is dried out. I remember hitting 3 irons to some holes and the lads in the afternoon hitting wedge. Wow. Now, I know I didn't hit it that far, but I certainly wasn't that short.
God, that's
what was your best ever finish in Dubai?
10th, I think, or yeah, thereabouts.
A few bits and pieces just before as we begin to wrap up. It's worth pointing out, Ewan Murray in The Guardian has pointed out that Premier League golf absolutely remains confident of delivering a breakaway tour. They've sent formal offer letters to a bunch of top players and the total amount goes into the hundreds of millions. So Rory McIlroy, who shot this thing down pretty firmly in February, has not been approached. But letters have been sent to Phil Mickelson, Adam Scott, Henrik Stenson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Rose, Ricky Fowler and Paul Casey. And PGL declined to comment any further than that. But they're still beavering away here and they've sent letters of offer.
As the best response I saw was, I don't see Rory McIlroy or Tiger Woods' name on that list. So what is the point?
I would say
unless they feel they can put so much pressure on the two of them by signing everybody else up.
Yeah.
But again, like how many of those players are under 35?
I know. But I would say their policy is, well, if we can't get McIlroy and Woods, let's get the other 18 of the world's top 20 and go at it that way. And then eventually McIlroy and Woods will have to join. That seems to be their strategy now. Initially, it was let's get the big one or two and then everyone will follow. Now, maybe they're trying to get safety in numbers and the other one or two will have to follow eventually. But yes, Mickelson, what? I mean, he's just a kind of, he'll be a tourist attraction. You know, he's 50. Adam Scott, Stenson, Kepka's young, Rose is 40, Fowler's young, Casey is kind of 40s territory as well. It'd be a decent start though. Jeez, the PGA Tour would miss him.
Yeah.
The other thing just to mention, Beef Johnson, he's had a tough time. So this was James Corrigan. And basically last week at the British Masters, Johnson pulled out 9 holes in due to what Corrigan says were fears concerning his mental health. He talked about this last year, the pressures on tour. He'd gone back to his hotel rooms and cried after competitive rounds. So it seems he didn't feel comfortable in the COVID-19 environment when he got to close house. And he said, I've been on and off bed playing for months. I kept changing my mind, but actually being here and confined to the hotel, confined to the course, not being able to be with my family, it's not what I want at this moment. It's not how I want to live my life. So I've learned now to be honest, whereas in the past I might have just swallowed it. I'm not going to do that anymore. If I'm not happy, I'm not going to be here. That's my golden rule now. And he has got out of Dodge. So good on him. At least he's looking after himself. And
yeah,
he's decided to.
The positive to come out of this is, other than him taking care of himself, is that the European Tour have been very sympathetic and compassionate in their treatment. So they've offered him all the kind of services that are required. So it's not as if there's no sense of like, oh, what's he doing? You know, so, I mean, they were very much on board with providing a duty of care to him. And, you know,
in 2016, they started that, having, what would you call it, doctors on site and confidential phone line and, you know, for your mental health and all the rest.
So. Now, they've made it very clear that they respect anonymity and confidentiality, so that they're not going to discuss anything that they've done. And I think that's absolutely correct. Mm. But it is, I mean, it is interesting is that you had like a character who was, you know, in a sense larger than life, you know, the big beard, you know, the jovial fun maker, and then lurking behind all of that, it was just like real torment, real difficulty. And, yes. You know, I think it's great that he had the courage. I don't know if it's courage or maybe he just got to a point where he couldn't do it any other way, but he had to come out and go, look, this is what's been going on. I'm taking the time and it's a far healthier atmosphere. This kind of much more compassionate, nurturing and understanding one.
Because he could have easily said, I have a back injury and I'm pulling out.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and instead he had
last week to say, no. I know, it's a mental health issue. And that's just becoming the norm. It's an amazing thing. I don't think 10 years ago any sports person would have withdrawn from a tournament and said it's mental health as opposed to it's my back.
Mm.
You know,
I'm always surprised that with golf it's not more common in many ways, because you look at a sport like cricket where, again, there's so much time spent away from home that for 19, 20-year-olds who are starting out and touring, like Peter often talks about the pressure that is involved as well, but having to spend so much time in a hotel room by yourself with all that weight on your shoulders, that, and again, maybe this is, as Jim says, one of the positives, that he makes it easier now for more people to come out.
That's right. I wish him every success, as, you know, I think most of us can identify with mental health or have been touched by it either directly or indirectly. So, you know, I think when you read stories like this, though you feel for the individual, you also applaud, I don't know if trailblazing is the right word, but you know what I mean? It's just like he's setting a marker, and luckily enough, the institutions that are most pertinent to him, in this case, the European Tour, that the European Tour have shown themselves to be cognizant of the need to be listening, to be compassionate, to offer the correct amount of service that you need to deal with issues like this. Because as you said, Nathan, it's just like, or Peter, you can testify, like life on the road is lonely and difficult for a lot of people.
It is, yeah. And like, you know, when I was having bad times and stuff like that, you'd be in the room and I was lucky enough to have, you know, Damien McGrain with me. And, you know, I just turn over and have a look at him. There he'd be in his boxers and eating jellies. And I'd say to myself, look, world is not that bad.
McGrain
just has a beautiful body, does he? Is that what you're getting at here?
Damien McGrain.
Feast your eyes on this, Peter.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll spend any time in it, really, because I was reading the quotes. It's just beyond sad. Camilo Villegas and his daughter passed away. It's horrific. 22 months old, so poor fella. That news kind of came through. On a happier note, to sort of edge towards and segue towards the finish, Miguel Angel Jimenez is currently breaking Sam Torrance's European Tour record, his 707th event. Today, which is just, he's won 21 times. It just shows how much you lose in golf. 21 wins, 707 tournaments. So you know Miguel. I mean, you must play with him a bunch of times.
A bit, yeah.
Absolutely dreadful English. But he's kind of caught the imagination all the same.
He's one of the nicest guys out on tour. And his English is, it's the accent more than anything else than the actual English itself. It's the way he speaks. You can understand him if you've listened to him a few times. But a spectacular character. Great for the game. Great for the European Tour. And it was very underrated for the standard of player he was. And now kind of has proven that He's kept the same swing for whatever many years he's been out on tour for the 707 events that he's played.
That seems to be another the secret, guy, doesn't it?
Yeah, another guy playing 500 this week is David Drysdale, who I started out with many, many years ago. So 500 events is a long time as well.
It does. There's really a brilliant video, Joe, of, I don't know if you saw it, I think the European Tour put it out, of Jimenez and Seve, right when Miguel Angel was starting out and couldn't speak any English. So they had to get Seve, who I think he might have just beaten, to come in as the interpreter.
No way. Amazing.
Yeah. My lasting memory of Jimenez is holding out on 17 in Valderrama. Does anybody remember that shot? I think he hit like maybe a 4-iron or 3-iron, hold out for two in on the 17th in Valderrama to win. I think it was the Volvo Masters at the time, or to go on and win the Volvo Masters.
Right. So someone who's played 707 times in European Tour events, really the European Tour should have rewarded that with a Ryder Cup captaincy, you would think, if it wasn't all so political. Like if ever there was somebody...
Or if he could speak English better.
So what is the issue? Do they think he might not be a good captain, or is it down to the commercial English language side of things?
It's shocking, but it's down to the commercial English language. Like it's a European Tour. I used to say to Miguel, why don't you just get a translator come in, and you don't have to speak English. It's not all about, you have the charisma, you have to do it. But Miguel, on the other hand, was it probably a little bit selfish for himself. He saw getting onto the Champions Tour far more important than being Ryder Cup captain. And that would have certainly interfered with his Champions Tour starting out on. So he was counting on that rather than the Ryder Cup. He would have liked the Ryder Cup, but I don't think he would have given it. He didn't want to give it as much time. But I think if he had pushed the boat, he could have got the Ryder Cup captaincy. And that was the year Darren Clarke got it, or that he was picked. It was a choice between, I would have said Miguel and Darren, and Darren got the nod.
That went well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we just have a little shout out for good old poor or Renato Paratore, who won the English Masters?
Yeah, please.
He did well. Dropped two shots over four rounds. Two bogeys. That's it.
I watched a bit of it. It was good. It was Justin Harding in second. Man.
Yeah.
Funny. I saw there was somebody wrote a piece a couple of months back, and they were, clock with me. It was a high profile Irish Times piece. And in the midst of it, kind of complaining that like, oh, all we have now is like to watch golfers take time over three footers. And then I was watching at the weekend, Justin Harding, he must have missed 2-3 footers. And like, there's this misnomer outside the game that those kind of things are easy. Jeez, on a Sunday.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's so tough. So tough. And maybe it's not appreciated, but he was kind of kicking himself. And I hadn't really heard much of Paratore before. Is he a big prospect?
Yeah, really good kid. Really, really nice kid as well.
Is he?
He would have been in the same kind of caricature of Manassero. And unfortunately he's disappeared off the face of the earth now, Matteo Manassero, after winning the BMW in Wentworth.
Yeah.
But Renato Paradore is excellent player.
Okay. Good. We are pretty much done. Next week it's major week. So we're gonna record on a Wednesday. We're gonna record on a Wednesday because obviously a lot of it will be preview heavy as opposed to just chewing the fat. So we'll try and get it out for you by what kind of lunchtime territory on Wednesday. First major of the year. I can't believe we're here. It's actually just so exciting. Golf Weekly is brought to you, very happy to say again, in association with Now TV. So you can stream this weekend's WGC and next week's PGA Championship with a Now TV Sky Sports Pass. Fellas, we'll leave it there until next week. Enjoy the WGC and then its major territory. Nathan Fionn, Peter Laurie, thanks a mil.
Thanks.
Thank you.
OTB Sports Golf Weekly with Now TV. Stream this weekend's World Golf Championship in Memphis with a Now TV Sky Sports Day or Month Pass.